This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, welcome back. Crossover NBA podcast. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Happy New Year, Beck. The one and only time I will say Happy New Year. I feel like it's been abused too often. Our phrase is abused too often in conversations. I feel like, you know, January 1st, you can say Happy New Year. Like, after that, just let it go.
This is very Larry David of you. It's January 4th as we record this, which I'm with Larry David on this one too, I think. Like, this is the outer limit, right? Like, we have not had a conversation since the calendar changed. So it's fine. Happy New Year, Chris. We can say that right now. That's it. Statute of limitations runs out very quickly.
Yeah, it does. Any New Year's resolutions before we get started? Are you a resolutions guy?
Nah.
Oh, you're just flawless, right? You're just... No issues.
Yeah. I mean, my issues are unsolvable at this stage of my life. If I've gotten this deep into...
That's the spirit.
Plus, it's little things, right? It's like, on any given day, we don't have to wait till the new year to make a resolution. Like, I could just say, like, you know what? I should probably cut back on the red vines this year. But I'm not going to cut back on the red vines. I love red vines.
Yeah, I've got the usual... resolutions, try to eat a little bit better, try to cut down on the candy. You know how it goes, Howard. When you're on the road, it's just brutal. Eat whatever's put in front of you. And oftentimes in press rooms, there are not a healthy section of some of these press rooms. So I'm going to do my best to cut back on some of those things. All right, Howard, I want to jump into a few different things. And I want to begin down in Houston where the wheels are starting to come out off the wagons a little bit. For the Rockets. On Saturday, Houston went into the locker room down 22 points to the Denver Nuggets. From there, things really unraveled. According to The Athletic, two starters, Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood, got into a heated argument with Rockets assistant coach John Lucas. Porter reportedly threw something and needed to be separated from Lucas. After that altercation, Porter left the arena. Wood returned to the bench but refused to go into the game when Steven Silas, the head coach, called on him. Now, on Monday, both players were suspended for one game. Here is what Steven Silas had to say about the incidents.
As far as Kevin, he, you know, like I said, we had a spirited debate. He lost his temper at halftime to the point where I thought for what would be best for the team and the best for our culture as a group and the just making sure that everybody is on the same page. I thought it would be best for him to be suspended for today's game. Christian, we had a disagreement as far as him going back into the game in the second half, and I decided it would be best for the team. And it's very much attached to accountability for everybody on our team. And my job is to hold people accountable to their actions.
So, Howard, I've got a few thoughts on this. First, I've never heard of a player leaving the arena because of something that happened at halftime, because of an altercation. Like, I have heard of guys refusing to go into games, being benched for the second half, things like that. I have not heard of a player doing what Kevin Porter Jr. did. And I asked around. Like, I called a few coaches last night. I talked to a couple of executives. Nobody really heard anything about this. I haven't heard of anything like this, rather. So that's number one. Number two, I don't know how you go back in something like this. I don't know how Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood go back to their team after incidents like this. I mean, you're in kind of the heat of battle here. You're on, at the time, I believe, a six-game losing streak. You're down 22 points to a team that's, you know, good, but because of injuries, the Nuggets are not unbeatable. And two of your best players, Christian Wood, leading scorer, leading rebounder, Kevin Porter, de facto point guard of that team, just quit. You just quit on the team. And I don't know how, like, a suspension for one game makes it any better. Like, I don't know how those two guys go back into that Rockets locker room and expect to be kind of re-embraced by their teammates. Now, they were called out initially because of what John Lucas saw as a lack of effort. And by the way, if you're beefing with John Lucas, the problem is probably more you than it is John Lucas. I mean, John Lucas has four decades of experience in the NBA as a player, as a coach. He also has done incredible work at working with athletes that have kind of lost their way and helping them kind of get back on track. If John Lucas is going at you, you sit and take the criticism from John Lucas. Like, that's an aside to all that. But I just don't know how this continues with Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood with that team. I don't know how it gets any better. What was your take on what happened in Houston?
Well, first of all, yeah, I agree with you, obviously, on John Lucas. The man is a legend, and anybody who doesn't know his story, go Google his name. You'll find it really quickly. And on that note also, phenomenal story that our friend Sean Powell over at NBA.com had written about John Lucas and Kevin Porter Jr. to start the season when things were still in a more constructive tone between them. But it gives you a lot of insight into Porter and what he's been through in his life, which is considerable. Like, it's, you know, there's, you know, if you look at Kevin Porter Jr. and you wonder about his kind of rocky start to his career and things he's gone through, go read Sean Powell's piece and you'll understand at least a little bit about him. And doesn't excuse anything, but he's been through some stuff. And John Lucas, of course, went through a lot very early in his career, got himself on track, and has used his wisdom to great effect on generations of players since. So yeah, if you're Christian Wood or Kevin Porter Jr., you're going to John Lucas, you picked the wrong guy to battle. But that's what's so alarming to me, Chris. I'm not going to say that the Houston Rockets are the most stable organization because they're not, or that they're the best run because they're not. Look at everything they've been through the last couple of years in losing Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni and James Harden and Russell Westbrook. But there are good people there. And they knew they were rolling the dice when they decided to pick up Kevin Porter Jr., who was just outright cut by the Cavaliers, who just decided, after spending a first-round pick on him and dealing with some things with him in his first year, they just decided, this is not a player we want to invest more time in. And that said a lot, especially given where the Cavs were at that time, that they just decided to cut him loose entirely. And Christian Wood, while productive over the course of the last couple of years in a couple of places, Detroit and Houston, has had some bumps along the way too. But this is what happens. I mean, when you're the Rockets and you're looking for hidden gems or, just just trying to find young guys to build around who may have some rough spots. You knew you were taking a risk when you brought these guys in, especially Kevin Porter Jr. And do you have the infrastructure? Do you have the foundation to deal with it? John Lucas is a great place to start. So if you had asked me in the abstract a year ago, hey, is this a good place for these guys to go where they'll have the right support and the right leadership? I'd say yes, because of John Lucas in particular, and the rest of that coaching staff too, and certainly Steven Silas. But do they have the veterans there outside of Eric Gordon and, DJ Augustine? I mean, like, there's not a lot of gray hairs on this roster, not a lot of guys who have been through a lot. I don't know if you've got enough there to coax these guys through these kinds of times. And, listen, maybe they're just not going to be. Like, maybe there is no good answer. Maybe Kevin Porter Jr. is never going to get it right. We see that happen sometimes too. I'm not saying that he won't. I'd never want to write a guy off this early in his career. He's very young. But some guys never figure it out. So maybe it's not on the Rockets. But you do have to have the support system there when you're, taking a risk on guys who have a history as these guys do. So I don't know where it goes from here. I mean, you know, look, teammates can forgive it. They can bring him back into the fold, and you know,
you gotta admit though,
Howard,
that's tough to like. That's not a fight in the locker room. That's just quitting. Like, it's as simple as that. That's quitting. You quit on your team. Two players, two starters, two of the best players on that team just quit. Now, I wrote a column about this on SI.com. I know it sounds like a nuclear option to, you know, just cut ties with these two players, but the Rockets, they've got to build a culture. Now, you just said, like, when you're in a position like the Rockets, you're trying to take a flyer on these guys, try to find a diamond, whatever. The Rockets have talent on that roster. Pretty good young talent. Like, Jalen Green has the potential to be a terrific scorer. Alperen Sengun is someone that has looked like he could be one of the steals in the draft from this past year. 6'10", can rebound, looks like he can shoot the three down the line. Good player. You got Jayshon Tate, who's got a little bit of that PJ Tucker in him, can be a defensive-minded guy in your front court, defend a bunch of different positions. Like, those are the guys you are going to be building around. They're not. It's not going to be Kevin Porter and Christian Wood. Like, it's just, I think we've reached that point. Like, Kevin Porter Jr. is extension eligible this summer. Can you imagine any scenario where the Rockets committed serious money to him? Like, real money? Anything beyond, like, money that they wouldn't mind eating if things go wayward once again? Same thing with Christian Wood. He's got 1 year left in his contract. He's extension eligible this summer. Like, Wood puts up numbers. He was fourth in the most improved player voting last year. But he has yet to show anywhere that he's a winning player. It's not, you know, look, it's not on him that he played for Detroit and they're bad. Now he's with Houston, they're bad. But all I've seen from Christian Wood is that he can put up numbers. I've not seen contributions towards winning yet, at least not the kind of contributions that would warrant being paid real money by the Houston Rockets. Your future, if you're Houston, is Green, it is Tate, it is Sengun, and it's whoever comes out of this high lottery pick that you're going to have next year, whether that's Chet Holmgren or Jabari Smith or any of the other guys that are out there sitting at the top of next year's draft. Those are the guys you're building around. Every other roster spot needs to be devoted to guys that will help them succeed, veteran guys that will help them succeed. I just don't see the point right now at keeping Porter Jr. and Wood around when they're smart people in Houston. They know that these two guys are not going to be part of their long-term future. So my opinion is that you just cut Kevin Porter Jr. Like, you eat the last of the, like, $1.8 million he's due this year. I think it's $3.2 million next year. And you trade Christian Wood. Like, there's a market for Christian Wood. Like, Charlotte would love to get their hands on Christian Wood. Portland would love a guy like Christian Wood. I'm sure the Lakers, who want everybody at this point, they would love to get a guy like Christian Wood. So you can deal him and then just focus on your culture. Try building, you know, things in a more productive way. Like, you have the coach. Like, Steven Silas is an excellent coach. He's probably going to wind up getting scapegoated for this mess at some point at the end of the year, because that's the way it goes in the NBA. But Steven Silas is an excellent coach, a very good developmental guy, as he's shown in previous stops as an assistant. So you've got a good coach. You've got some pretty good young players, a decent foundation. I don't know why you're messing around with stuff like this that can only serve to create negativity around your team and potentially hamper the development of some of the young guys you're really locked in on.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with any of that, Chris. I don't know what the Rockets are going to become, where this is all headed, what the overall plan is. I mean, obviously, look, it's a teardown, and they are going young, and they're trying to stock up on young players, and that's the general direction, which is the normal thing to do when you were forced into a position to trade guys, when you had to offload Harden and Westbrook and start over. And I don't mind them going, you know, making some rolls of the dice, but you also do have to acknowledge when those rolls have gone bad, when you've crapped out. I don't know if we're there yet. There's often a lot more to these things than we see or hear, right? So have there been any other incidents that are of a serious nature with either Porter or Wood? Have you hit the third strike yet with these guys? Are you okay still proceeding with maybe just one of them? You're right on Porter Jr. It's like it's a small price to pay with another whatever you burn $3 million or whatever off of cap if you cut him now for next season. That's not going to kill you. You're going to be below the cap anyway, and you know you're a rebuilding team. It's fine. And I agree that there are teams that would not only love to have Christian Wood for his talent, but could handle whatever comes with that, a more veteran team. There are plenty of places I could see him. I think he'd be great in Dallas. Portland, as you mentioned. There are plenty of others who could use a talented big. I just don't know if we're at that point yet. I don't know. Like, has Houston definitively reached the breaking point with either or both? I do think there's the danger of if you hold onto them too long and if those things continue and are unchecked or they're not held accountable. And listen, to their credit, they suspended them both for a game. So they're trying to establish what the rules and what the limits are. But you don't want to poison the overall environment, right? When you get Jalen Green and when he's back, when you have the next group that comes behind that in the coming draft and the one after that, you certainly want to have a good, stable, and accountable environment for guys to come up in if you're going to build something productive. So there is
Howard,
that danger.
If these guys, look, I just go back to the quitting, right? Like, I don't...
Yeah.
Like, how many guys do you know in the NBA that in the years you've covered the league that have done something like that, that have just quit on the team? Like, I can't think of any. Like, I had one executive tell me a story about Delonte West that doesn't really match, but, you know, whatever.
Delonte West had serious issues. I mean,
right, but
to be
I don't,
clear. So.
I just don't know how you bounce back from that. Like, if you get benched by your coach for whatever, that's one thing. Get into an argument with a coach. That happens all the time in the NBA. It's a combative sport. It's a long season, and there are ups and downs that sometimes manifest themselves in arguments with coaches. You get into a fight with teammates. That happens all the time in locker rooms. But when you straight up quit, I don't know how you bounce back. Not with the team you're currently on. Maybe you can revive your career somewhere else, but when you leave the arena, I keep going back this time. You left the arena, like leaving. Like, let's, you know, hop in the car and get out of here. Your team's down 22 against Denver. Christian Wood is, yeah, if he's not the starting center, I mean, he's the big man on that team. Nikola Jokic is out there cooking. And Christian Wood's like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to go back in the game. Like, this is quitting, straight up quitting. And I just don't see a pathway back, at least not one that's going to lead to a productive outcome in the long term.
You may absolutely be right, Chris. I'm not sure if we're there yet. That's all. And, right. You know, if somebody wanted to make me a great offer for Christian Wood between now and the trade deadline, which is now just a little more than a month away, I would certainly listen. But I'd be listening regardless. Even if Christian Wood was being a model citizen, I would listen because the Rockets are in a position where they can't afford to necessarily say, well, we've already got what we need here. Like, they should be listening to anything anyway. The Porter one's a little bit more complicated. He is a talent. He is really young. He did come in with warts that you knew were there. And no, you never want to see a guy quit on a team, but let's just be clear real quick. I don't know that I've ever heard of a guy just leaving the arena mid-game like that. Like, that is alarming. I will not diminish that. However, we've seen guys quit in much more subtle ways, even while they're still in uniform and on the court and in the middle of the third quarter and just decide to stop defending or stop shooting
Houston.
Or whatever.
In Houston, we saw it like a year ago with James Harden. Like, kinda,
so
you know,
there you go.
Sleepwalking
and
through.
It's different when it's James Harden. You know, you're not going to just cut James Harden. But guys of lesser abilities and importance than James Harden have done the same. So it's just a matter of degree in this case. I would let things play out a little further before I just decide to start, you know, blowing things up.
Can I just say one more thing about Steven Silas? Like, how many bullets does Steven Silas have to take for this front office? Like, the fact that Steven Silas is sitting up there in Philadelphia by himself answering questions about a blow-up from two players he had nothing to do with acquiring was remarkable to me. And like, the front office, Raphael Stone, the general manager of that team, they need to be there in situations like this. It's not a comfortable situation to be in, but you have got to be there side by side with your head coach answering these questions. It's wild, Howard. I'm going down and looking at the history of incidents in Houston. Like, James Harden is doing his thing in the first half or the first month of last season. Who's out there answering for it? Steven Silas. The John Wall situation kind of blows up a little bit about a month ago with Wall, you know, suggesting he wants to come back through intermediaries. And who's out there answering it? Steven Silas is out there answering it. Now you have a meltdown in your locker room, and it's just Steven Silas up there answering it. Like, you got to be better in that front office. You've got to be out there supporting your coach. Maybe it's not just you. And I had one executive suggest to me, like, well, look, Silas probably wants to be out there because he doesn't want an appearance. He wants to be appear in charge in this situation. He doesn't want it to seem like somebody else is making these decisions. But the two of you got to be out there. Stone and Silas, side by side, presenting United Front. It's wild how many times Steven Silas had to be out there by himself answering questions for, you know, problems that he had no role in actually creating.
Well, it reminds me of when Brett Brown was constantly having to answer for all the things going wrong with the Sixers during the early years of the process, and Sam Hinkie would never speak publicly. This is the responsibility that comes with being a front office, being the GM or team president. And we've seen this with Knicks executives hiding, with Sam Hinkie hiding, now Rafael Stone hiding. When things go wrong, that's your job. When it's personnel and when it's disciplinary matters, that you're absolutely right. It should not be on the coach to have to answer for all of that. And again, these are the risks they took. This is what happens when you take those risks. Sometimes it can blow up in your face, and the front office has to be the one accountable for that. It is unfair to Steven Silas.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. The Brooklyn Nets we'll welcome back Kyrie Irving on Wednesday when the team travels to Indiana to take on the Pacers. Irving has been back practicing with the team over the last week. He is still only eligible to play in some road games. He can't go to New York and play at the Garden. He can't go to Toronto and play there. But he can play for, I believe, it's like 20, 21 games that's left in the regular season for the Nets. The Nets are bringing him back because, like everybody else, they have been ravaged by COVID. The question is, Howard, how long will Kyrie Irving's return last? I've got some thoughts on this, but I want to, you know, get you out there first. Like, what do you think of the decision to bring back Kyrie, and how long do you think it's going to last?
So let me just say this about the Kyrie Irving situation. Whatever it was, like, I think it's been like 7 to 10 days now since they first signaled they were going to bring him back. And at the time, yes, the Nets, along with most of the league, was ravaged by COVID. But as I look at the injury report right now, assuming this is accurate, the only one, two guys who are still out are Joe Harris, who's been out pretty much all season with the ankle, and LaMarcus Aldridge. They're back. COVID is not ravaging this roster right now. The Nets are whole. If you thought you needed to bring Kyrie Irving back because you didn't have enough bodies and you were going to have to fill them with G-leaguers and hardship guys and all that stuff, that moment's already passed. That moment is already passed. So you're not, don't tell me it's about COVID. Don't tell me it's about protocols and all this stuff. It's not. You're bringing him back now because you want to bring him back now. Fine. Be straightforward about it, though, because the Nets certainly made a big deal early this season about, we're not going to have Kyrie Irving play part-time for us. Whether it was Sean Marks framing it more as a basketball issue or Joe Tsai introducing the concept that this was also about principle and about COVID and about being responsible and all that, the Nets made a decision based on certain principles that they were standing by. And they've abandoned them, Chris. I don't care how you slice this. I don't care how you rationalize it. I don't care if you agree or disagree with the decision. The one thing that's indisputable is whatever the Nets said they stood for in October when they said he's not going to play as a part-time player for us because he's not vaccinated, because he's not eligible to play home games, and whatever part of whatever the percentages were about health concerns, the principle behind vaccination and wanting everybody to be vaccinated, or just about disruption and not having a consistent roster. Whatever the percentages of those reasons were, those were the principles they stood on and made what I thought was a pretty bold decision in October. You have abandoned all of that on January. It will be, I think, the 5th when he makes his debut in Indiana. So you need to give us a better explanation than simply, well, COVID and protocols or whatever. Because your guys are back. You're only missing Joe Harris and LaMarcus Aldridge now. This looks to me, Chris, more like the Nets caving to a different reality, which is they're going to burn out Kevin Durant before they get to the playoffs. James Harden has kind of recovered from his early season struggles, but the drop-off in talent from those guys to the rest of this roster is steep. You're good, but you're not great. You're not dominant. You're not the overwhelming team that you thought everybody would be fearing when you first brought the three stars together. As you and I speak right now, they're 23-12, which is a very good record, but it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5th? Yeah, 5th in the Eastern Conference. And not by a lot. Excuse me, hold on. I have this jumbled. This is what happens when I start playing with tabs, looking at different point differential and other stuff.
No, they're right up there with the Bulls.
They're second. Neck and neck. They're second in the Eastern Conference. I had resorted by differential a minute ago and did not resort. Good job, Beck. All right, they're second in the East. But they are in a dogfight between themselves, the Bucks, the Bulls, the Miami Heat, who, like, hopefully that injury to Jimmy Butler from last night isn't too bad. The Cavs are still hanging in right there, if you want to count them in this. The Sixers, if they ever trade Ben Simmons and get good value back, they're going to be in it. Are the Nets far and away better or even demonstrably better than most of the teams I just mentioned? Put the Cavs to the side for a minute because we still don't really know and they're a young team. But the Heat, the Bucks, the Bulls, those are all legit teams. And the Sixers have Joel Embiid, who's an MVP candidate again. And they are one Ben Simmons trade away from being firmly in this thing too. So they need Kyrie Irving. I get that. But just say it's about that. Just say it's about the fact that we don't have the overwhelming talent that we had hoped to have. We need him back. But it's still coming with a bunch of difficulties and obstacles. He's only going to play home or road games and not home games for the foreseeable future. No indication that he's going to get vaccinated. No indication that the city of New York is going to change its law. So you have a part-time player for the 20 or so games that you mentioned that he'll be eligible to play. They'll be changing their lineup and rotation every single time they bounce between home and road. And then they'll eventually get to the postseason where he'll only be eligible for half of every series. And we always joke about the, what if it's a game 7 at Barclays Center? Or it's not even a joke, but what happens when that arises if it comes to that? They may never get there because you're going to be missing him for either games 1 and 2 if you started on the road or games 3 and 4 if you started at home. You're missing him for two of the first four games of every series, and you could fall behind 3-1 and be facing elimination for a game that he may or may not be eligible for. It is fraught with problems. And we just spent a whole, 10 minutes talking about accountability with the Rockets. Where's Kyrie Irving's accountability? I mean, understand.
Right, let me get in here.
All right, go. Okay.
That's a little bit different. Look,
no, Chris, hold on. He decided not to play. Let's be clear. He decided not to play the first 2.5 months of the season. He decided to. Don't tell me it's, well, personal choices, this, whatever. Bullshit. Kyrie Irving decided not to play.
I'm obviously not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not. But it's wildly different. He did not decide not to play. He decided not to get the vaccine, and the city of New York put together a mandate that, to me, is, when it comes specifically to Kyrie Irving, is completely bogus. It's insane. I am all for, on a personal level, vaccine mandates basically everywhere. Arenas, restaurants, let's bring on airplanes, whatever you got to do. But number one, if you just kind of look at it specifically for Kyrie, he's not a health risk because he goes out there, and because he's unvaccinated, he's subject to, ridiculously stringent NBA testing rules and, limitations, at least theoretically, on where he's allowed to go. On top of that, as we've discussed numerous times, the mandate not including visiting players who are unvaccinated is wildly inconsistent. 3% of the NBA is unvaccinated. Any of those 3% can walk into New York and play at the Barclays Center. That is just plain wrong. And if I'm the Nets... If I'm the Nets, Howard, I'm spending the better part of the next 2 months waging a PR campaign at new mayor Eric Adams and saying, look, if you want to take this stance, if you want to say Kyrie Irving is ineligible to play, well, make it sweeping. Say any players that come in that are unvaccinated are not allowed to play. I can't get on board with comparing what Kyrie Irving did with Christian Wood and Kevin Porter Jr. did in Houston.
It's not a discipline issue, but it is an accountability issue. The analogy I'm drawing, Chris, is about accountability. I don't care. Like, yeah, New York's law, we agree. It's inconsistent, and it was not logically enacted, right? If you're going to ban Kyrie. And and I get it. It has to do with, workplace and all this other stuff.
Same workplace, though. Same workplace,
right,
for
it's
everyone.
Right, but those people don't work here. Those players don't work in New York. They're visiting, whatever. It is inconsistent, and it is illogical. It's not about that. Kyrie Irving still chose this path, Chris. He chose not to get the vaccine that all of his teammates got, that 97% of other NBA players got, that all the coaches got, that all the staff people got, that all the ushers got, that all the ticket takers got, that everybody serving food got. Everybody else did it, whether it was for the common good, whether it was because they wanted to be eligible to work, whatever else. Kyrie Irving opted not to. He has that right. But don't tell me that he's not accountable for the fact that he opted out of, at a minimum, half of the Nets games for the first couple months because of the New York law. And then also, obviously not by his choice, the Nets then decide not to make him eligible for the other half by deciding we're just not going to play you at all. But he, with a single decision, Kyrie Irving could have been playing in all of those games, all of them. So let's not pretend he did not choose this path. He didn't set out to not play. He set out to not get the vaccine. But it's one and the same when it comes to cause and effect. He knew what the consequences would be. He chose that path. And when the consequences became even steeper because the Nets said we're not going to play you at all, even for road games, he still chose that path. So let's not pretend that he didn't choose not to play. He did. In effect, what he did was said, it's more important for me to stick to some principle that he cannot even clearly state to anybody and still has not clearly stated. It's more important for him to stick to that than it was for him to play these past 30-something games for the Nets. He chose that. So no, it's not the same exactly as what Christian Wood or Kevin Porter Jr. did in Houston. But when it comes to accountability to an organization and the teammates that the folks that you signed up with, it is the same.
I buy that. Look, I get that part of the argument. I guess what I just go back to is that this New York City mandate is effectively to help ensure public safety. Because of the NBA's testing protocols, Kyrie Irving is as low a risk as you can possibly get out there. I don't believe he's right, and I agree with you. He shouldn't, if he's going to not get vaccinated, how about just explain why? Like, there's really been no direct explanation from Kyrie about why he's choosing not to get vaccinated. Just some reporting around it that has fluctuated over the last couple of months. But he's not a health risk. He's not, like, he's unvaccinated, but he's having to test every single day. He's having to test on game days. I just don't agree with this mandate at all when it comes to Kyrie Irving. For everybody else, absolutely. And if everybody else wants to test as often as the NBA is making you test, you should be able to go into the arena as well. But Kyrie, I think he should be allowed to play by the city of New York. To the point of the question, though, Howard, like, you're right. They're bringing him back because they're seeing Kevin Durant play like 45 minutes a night over the last month. And, you know, they're a little bit concerned about the lack of depth on the team. And to be fair, like, we don't know what the future is of this Omicron variant. We're seeing guys go in and out of protocols, not frequently, but occasionally so far. We don't know if these guys can catch it again and wind up back in the protocols. Plus, testing is increasing, as we've seen over the last week. So there's that part of it. But I just think they should play this thing out, go through the regular season, and see what happens. Like, see what happens when the playoffs roll around and see what the city says, where the city's at that point. And then, if you get to the playoffs, you not only have Kyrie available, but presumably in game shape and ready to go. The last thing you want, Howard, is to have New York City change this mandate in, like, mid-April, and then be like, all right, Kyrie, now you can come back. And how long is it going to take him to get going at that point? So for the Nets, I think a good basketball move is to keep him around.
Possibly. And just for quick reference here, Kevin Durant is averaging 36.9 minutes, almost 37 minutes a game. That is his highest since...
And it's even higher, Howard. And I think if you look at December, December, he was like around 40. So, like, and he's had 48 minute games that he's played this season.
And it's his highest average since 2013-14. And he was 25 then. He's now 33 and a couple years removed from an Achilles injury. It's not a wise path. And, you know, Steve Nash has been pretty straightforward about this when he was asked, several weeks ago about, the minutes. And it was like, well, we could play him or we could lose. Like, it was basically that was the decision. So Kyrie Irving gives you that buffer and that room for error when Kevin Durant needs to breather. And it means you can ratchet down his minutes, but only for the road games and not at home. At home, he's back to playing 38, 40 minutes potentially. And then, yes, he can ratchet it down again, maybe the next night or a couple days later when they're on the road. I mean, it does still give you more talent for some of your games, and it does give you more of a breather for Kevin Durant in some way, shape, or form. But it's not like having Kyrie Irving back 100%. And you can't get him back 100% unless he either gets vaccinated or New York changes its law. And it's the same place we've been for months. And again, there will be challenges in dealing with this. They will be, there's a reason they chose not to play him the first time, because they didn't want to have to change his lineup and rotation every single time they bounce between home and road. They're now inviting that scenario. They're now going to do that. It will have reverberations. And again, Kyrie Irving can fix this tomorrow, today, 5 minutes ago, by just getting a shot that millions and millions of people around the world have gotten and have been fine with. So, I don't expect him to do that, but again, let's make it clear. Whatever difficulties the Nets have gone through, whatever difficulties are yet to come, it's because Kyrie Irving made a choice.
All right, I want to finish with a little bit of trade talk here. There's a lot of focus, and has been a lot of focus, justifiably, on what the Sixers might do with Ben Simmons. But a pretty interesting impact player that I think is going to be, if not available, talked about a lot, is Jeremy Grant in Detroit. Grant, who is a 20-point-per-game scorer, has been the last few years, a good defensive player. He's on a Pistons team right now that's going nowhere. He's out right now with an injury. He's expected to be back at some point. I think early February is the latest timetable that I saw. Grant could make a difference, Howard, on a lot of teams out there. I'm looking at like the Utah Jazz that could use a Jeremy Grant. The Chicago Bulls could use a Jeremy Grant. The Lakers certainly could use a Jeremy Grant. Boston, I think, could use a Jeremy Grant. He's fascinating to me because I think he's the level of player that, if traded to the right situation, could be the difference between winning a championship and not. Am I being too strong with that assessment?
No, and I would just say this too. Like, Jeremy Grant's a team, or is a player that just about every contending team or every team, period, could use, because he's kind of plug and play. Granted, his usage went way up when he moved from Denver to Detroit, where he became a featured player. But remember, not so long ago in Denver, Jeremy Grant was just a phenomenal 3-and-D guy who I don't think any of us realized the full extent of his offensive abilities and that he could carry the load the way he has. I think the ideal version of Jeremy Grant is somewhere in between, right? He's not just a role guy 3-and-D who's going to take an open shot now and then, as he was in Denver. He's also not necessarily a guy who you want as your number one option, as he had been on a rebuilding Detroit team. But because he's got a wide variety of abilities and can guard multiple positions, everybody could use him. Let's start with this. Let's start with who's not trading for him. Stop bringing the Lakers into this conversation. They have nothing they can trade.
Wait, are you sure, Howard? Because every time I go online, I hear about some kind of poo-poo platter that includes Taylor Horton Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and like the 2028 first-round pick. I had this very conversation with an executive last night about, like, why are we, like, tantalized by the fact the Lakers might offer a 2028 first round pick. I'm with you there. I like Taylor Horton Tucker, good player, but if Jeremy Grant really is on the block, I think there are going to be better trade options out there for Detroit.
Yeah, I don't even want to waste the last 90 seconds that we just wasted on it. So let's just forget that we ever talked about the Lakers as a possibility here. I don't know where to send him, in part because I've been looking at teams that I think could use him, and it's still, honestly, it's hard to find other great trade combinations, right? Like, he'd be great, frankly, back on the Nuggets.
Yeah.
But I think Aaron Gordon can't be dealt yet, or maybe he can be dealt soon. He was another one of those guys who, I think, because of extensions over the summer.
That's not what you're looking for, though. If you're Detroit.
But it's not what you're looking for. Right. Yeah. You're going younger, right? And I don't know that they've got a lot to offer along those lines. Like, could you do something around Will Barton, Bones Highland, and a couple of firsts? Is that tantalizing enough? I don't know. I looked at Utah because obviously everybody believes, you know, rightly so, that the Jazz could use him there. They don't have a lot of youth to deal either. I was playing with one of the trade machines, a Bogdanovich, Royce O'Neal, and a couple of firsts works, but it's not, again, not that tantalizing. You know, Bogdanovich is not young. Mavericks, Tim Hardaway Jr. and some stuff. I don't think it's a Porzingis deal. The Trailblazers could use him. Something around Covington and Nurkic and a couple of firsts, or Simons and Nurkic and a couple of firsts, Simons and Covington and a couple of firsts. The Nets could use him, but they don't have the assets. I have one fun possibility, which I'll get to in a second. But those are the ones off the top of my head. I also love him on the Heat, but unless they're going to trade Tyler Hero, I don't see how the Heat are getting him.
Yeah. Who's the tantalizing one? Was there it?
Sending Jeremy Grant back where it all began. He was a process guy. Back to Philly. Let's do Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons for... Oh, wow.
Jeremy Grant, Sadiq Bey, and Isaac Stewart. It leaves you a couple hundred thousand short for cap rules, but you can make that up pretty easily. I don't know, you know, like the Pistons as a rebuilding team with a lot of young players aren't really the team that you say we're one Ben Simmons away from something. And if you trade away too much of your youth, then what is Ben Simmons coming to play with aside from Cade Cunningham? You know, there's still a couple other guys too. I don't know if they're not the team that's in the right part of their growth cycle to add Ben Simmons, although Ben Simmons is still young and could be the guy you build around along with Cade Cunningham. So maybe, and if they're the Sixers, is Jeremy Grant, Sadiq Bey, Isaac Stewart, or some combination of other guys enough? Are you going to try to extract picks from the Pistons too? Is Detroit as a rebuilding team going to be willing to do that? I mean, this is thinking out loud territory, folks. I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying this is a viable possibility or fully fleshed out. It's just an interesting thing to think about.
Team you didn't mention, Chicago.
Like, yeah.
Chicago could really use him. The Bulls have slipped a little bit defensively over the last few weeks. They've had some guys out, and obviously that contributes to that. But the kind of crazy start they were on defensively has come back down to earth a little bit. They don't have the picks because of the deals they made the last couple of years, specifically Vucevic. But they do have Patrick Williams. Now, that may be too steep a price to pay for Jeremy Grant. But Jeremy Grant is not a rental. He's got 1 year left on his contract. So you'll have him next season as well. And I forget, how old is Grant? I think he's, I'm looking at somewhere, 27. So, you know, you can re-sign him and, you know, have him fit into this kind of nucleus of Vucevic, DeRozan, Zach LaVine, Lonzo Ball. He is plug and play, as you said, at multiple different positions. Like, he can defend, I think, probably three positions pretty well at this stage of his career, and in a supporting role on that team, I think he'd really thrive. The question Chicago would have to ask itself before pursuing a deal like that is, do we believe this is our year? Like, can we win a championship this season? I don't know the answer to that question right now. I mean, the Bulls have been the surprise team in the NBA this year. I mean, they are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference right now as we record this. Lonzo Ball has fit perfectly. DeMar DeRozan has been a all-NBA type of guy with this team. Zach LaVine's been great. Vucevic's been fine. Does Jeremy Grant get them past Brooklyn, past Milwaukee, past Miami? Does Jeremy Grant beat Golden State, beat Phoenix? I'd argue that a player like Jeremy Grant is pretty valuable in those situations because you're going to need guys that you can throw at Kevin Durant or Giannis, or in the finals, guys like Devin Booker or Klay Thompson, or, I mean, hell, I'll say Andrew Wiggins, who's having himself a hell of a year in yes. Golden State. Like, that's the question. Like, giving up Patrick Williams, that's a big ask. He was, what, the fourth pick, I think, in 2020? Like, he's got real potential. But Arturis Karnisovich has been kind of an all-in guy since he's taken over this team. Like, he's been dealing away draft picks. He's been making win-now type of moves. Like, is it prudent for Chicago to make one more? Like, if and this is still a big if, because I'm getting mixed signals, you know, when I talk to people about Detroit, about the availability of Jeremy Grant. But if Grant is available, do you push your chips in your Chicago, offer up Patrick Williams, and see if that gets it done? Because if you're the Pistons, that should get it done. Like, that's a guy that I'd want and I'd take, you know, with salaries, finding a way to match in a swap for Jeremy Grant.
So, I mean, on the fit side of it, it's obvious, right? Like, the Bulls are, as we record this, 11th in defensive efficiency, although, you know, they're a couple ticks out of, you know, being in the top 10. But still, they're 11th defensively. They could certainly use some defensive reinforcements. I mean, when is Jeremy Grant coming back? That's part of this too, right? Like, we don't know exactly what his return date is, what kind of shape he'll be in when he gets back.
Well, it's it's a hand injury, right?
It's a hand. No, I'm not saying.
So I'm sure he's working out, right? Like, you know,
I'm sure he is, but it's still a matter of getting back into kind of game shape or whatever. So, you know, we've seen this before. We're getting a guy mid season, especially if it's a really important guy, integrating him and making a run. It's difficult. Like, it's not an easy thing to just like pick up a major piece. But yeah, he's not a guy you're rebuilding your offense around, and he is plug and play, as we've said, so he'll fit in fine. And I think he's a seamless fit next to Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball. Like, he'd be great there and can play multiple positions, can guard multiple positions. I think they need that. DeRozan, obviously not a guy who has a defensive reputation. LaVine can kind of come and go. They lean a lot for perimeter defense on Caruso and Ball. And with Patrick Williams out, like, there's a hole. I mean, so to Patrick Williams' question, like, I guess it depends on what you think his true upside is. Like, if you think he's a future perennial all-star and you're a Bulls team that just broke through and your core outside of DeRozan is still pretty young, you've got some time to let this thing grow and you're already playing with house money because no one expected you to even be in the mix right now. But I don't mind, Chris, the idea of going all in. Like, if I know that Jeremy Grant is going to be healthy and back and ready to you know, play at a high level the rest of the season, if I think he's the guy who can help put me over the top against the Bucks and the Nets and the Heat in the East, yeah, I think I'm willing to move Patrick Williams. But it depends on what you think his ceiling is or what your expectations as a franchise are. And that's a tough one to assess right now this early in his career.
I'll say this, though. Windows in the NBA are really small. And they may look like, you know, you could look at Chicago and be like, all right, well, DeRozan's playing great. You can probably squeeze two more good years out of him. Lonzo, Zach, they're young guys. You know, this thing's going to be chugging along for the next few years. But DeRozan is playing out of his mind. Like, and maybe this is like kind of the evolution of DeMar DeRozan and he's going to play like this for the next couple of years. But nobody knows that. We also don't know like how good DeRozan is going to be in the playoffs. Like, you know, with Toronto, like, they didn't get very far with those DeRozan, Kyle Lowry cores. So, granted, they rented LeBron James year after year, but that's part of it. Man, unless you are sure that Patrick Williams is going to be a stud, and he looks like it at times. Like, he had a really good rookie year, shot close to 40% from three, 7-footer. I mean, there's a lot of things this guy can do. But unless you're sure, like, without a shadow of a doubt, that the next couple of years, Patrick Williams is going to be your starting center, he's going to be, like, your star, I'd make the call I would. And I don't know if it, I mean, Arturis Karnisovich might be one of the few GMs in the league today that is willing to do that. You know, based on what we've seen from him over the last couple of years with just going all in, dealing away draft picks, getting veterans into that mix, rolling the dice with big contracts for guys like DeRozan, Vucevic on a big deal. Like, he might be the guy that would do it. So I'm for it. I'm for it. Like, I think there's a window here. Like, we don't know. Like, the Nets look great, but we just talked about the Kyrie situation. Milwaukee, they look great. Are they unbeatable? I don't think so. Miami, they look really good at times too, but as you mentioned, some injury issues potentially there. And in the West, you know, we'll see. I think if you feel like you have an opportunity to win, you got to go for it, man. Like, you got to go for it. Like, take a shot, roll the dice, and then cross your fingers that Patrick Williams has turned like Hakeem Olajuwon the next couple of years.
Yeah. I'd be willing to live with it. You know, I mean, there's very few guys who, you know, in year one, year two, Patrick Williams year two, where you can look at him and say, oh man, we've got an all-timer on our hands. We got to keep this guy for the foreseeable future. Like, he's shown a lot of potential. There's a lot of promise. Jeremy Grant has already realized his promise and then some, has exceeded all expectations given
and
where
a
his
reminder
career started.
Is still 27. Like, so fits yeah. into that Lonzo,
absolutely.
Zach kind of thing. If you can,
yeah,
you know, and you're Chicago, you can afford to pay guys, you know, big money. So,
well,
you know, I mean, you
tell
can.
Them that.
Well, I mean,
no, they
can.
Like, they often yeah, don't.
They often don't. But, like, you know, you look, you can afford Grant's salary now, and if the opportunity presents to re-sign him, you know, the next year, you do that. Like,
yeah.
You're fine. You're financially,
I'm with you. I'm with you. They should be all in right now, and I think Jeremy Grant would be phenomenal for them and might just be the difference maker in an Eastern Conference race that is very, very tight right now.
I agree. All right, Howard, good stuff. We will do it again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.